I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to continue our conversation about the controversial Mounds Lake Reservoir Project. We will talk about where the project stands at present and what the sources of contention are. My guests are Dennis Ashley, Director of Operations and Business Development for the Madison County Chamber, Tim Maloney, Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, Mike Hicks, Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the proposed Mounds Lake Reservoir. It continues a conversation that we started some months ago, probably about this time last year. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Tim Maloney, who is the Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, Mike Hicks, who is the Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University, which did a research paper on the feasibility of the proposed reservoir, and Dennis Ashley, who is Director of Operations and Business Development for the Madison County Chamber. Welcome, all of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, John.
Good to be with you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to start the conversation by saying, last time we talked about this, there was a lot of listener feedback. We're anticipating there probably could be a fair amount today. If that's the case, I'm going to ask our listeners to make sure that they make their questions concise so everybody gets a shot at talking and we keep it tight. I'm going to start with you, Dennis. You know, for those people who haven't followed this closely and weren't listening to the conversation last time we were here, could you give us an overview of what the project is?
It's a proposed reservoir, 2,100-acre reservoir. That'll be a water supply need for central Indiana. It'll span from Anderson up to Yorktown. It's about 8.5 miles long. It's the largest reservoir in central Indiana upon completion.
Okay. And the work on it has not started yet, right?
No. We are in the earliest phases of moving this project along. We're trying to shut the door on what they call a phase two and get into the phase three where we can discover more about science, data, engineering on the project. So that's where we're at. We're trying to get the communities right now to come to the table to sit down. Anderson has voted on this. The city council in Anderson, the town council in Chesterfield has voted on this. Those two communities have said yes to sit down at the table. Daleville and Yorktown are considering it next. The idea behind the ordinance that's proposed to these two remaining communities is that would you like to sit at the table at a water infrastructure? And as we discover the science, the data, and the engineering, everyone can be at the table at the same time. That's how I understand the ordinance, and that's about where we're at.
Where the process is. Tim, what are the sources of concern here?
Well, from our standpoint, we start with concerns about the environmental impact of the reservoir, and you begin with the footprint of the lake itself, about 2,100 acres, and would inundate the White River Valley up to not as many as 9 miles upstream, depending upon the final configuration of the lake and some of the features they're proposing at the upstream limits. And you're talking about destruction of roughly 1,000 acres of high-quality hardwood forest that exists there now in the river valley. We would lose about a third of Mound State Park, the lowland areas at the park, which is mature hardwood forest right along the river, would be flooded. And in that area of the park is a very unique natural community, the Mounds Fen, that was created by the actions of glaciers and simply is such a complex system that humans would not be able to recreate that through mitigation. And then you have impacts to local parks in Anderson and Daleville and Chesterfield that would be flooded, very nice riverside parks in those communities, and very thriving recreation sector that already exists there in terms of kayaking and canoeing and fishing. All the visitors that come to Mound State Park and that float the river. So we're talking dramatic environmental damage to a very high-quality, forested, and very lightly developed river valley. And all that is damage is being proposed to occur in the name of a water supply reservoir for which there has been no demonstration that that's the best source of a future water supply, and nor have any buyers been identified for that water. So when you look at the environmental damage, the high cost, the lack of need for the purpose of the lake, it just doesn't pass any sensible policy test in our mind.
Okay. Mike, you approached this from a somewhat different angle. You came at it, obviously, as to do some research on sort of the feasibility of the project in general. Could you summarize to a degree what you found?
Well, I should say I'm one of 14 professors at Ball State who participate in a peer review. They all said I had the best face for radio, that I should be the guy to come in.
No, that's my line, Mike.
That's right. So there are many things that I can't get into that my colleagues have written about. Many of them have extensive work in this area. We've looked as economists at just a few issues. And so, you know, some of these, I'll call them the good, the bad, and ugly. And so the good is that, and I would applaud Dennis and the city of Anderson thinking outside the box in economic development. And so thinking about how amenities matter is part of this. And so what we think this would do if it were to be completely built would generate some economic activity, 100, 150 new jobs per year, mostly seasonal associated with the lake. Think Geist. And then there would be property value changes along the edge of the water, and that would be about the effect of the commercial effect. That's the good, and recreational opportunities for some people, that sort of thing. The bad, then we then slide into that, is that the premise under which that this would be constructed is that there's a demand for water there is absent. And I think and I again applaud the Pence administration for funding the Phase 2 study, but the Phase 2 study, quite candidly, if you look at the data and not the marketing-based conclusions that were driven by it, says this is not feasible. They assumed water demand and some cost issues, and there's just not water demand. I've sat on the state's Water Policy Commission. I've read their reports. There's just nothing there for water demand, and if there's something hidden, maybe we'll discover that today, but the fact is that citizens' water just last month in front of a group of 30 legislators in the rural caucus clearly said this is not part of our 50-year plan. We don't need the water, so we're going to be neutral on this project. There's just not water demand there. And then there's the ugly, and that's really the cost issues associated with it. So there's been two studies. The first study, and these follow a schedule that the National Environmental Protection Act dictates, is sort of a preliminary proposal that was built for economic development. The Phase 2 study shifted quickly when they found that was not a legal authority for the construction of the dam towards water demand. And they laid out sort of three issues. One's the engineering cost. They probably got that kind of right. We've been building dams for hundreds of years, so engineering is probably right. There's no real cost overruns associated with it. And then the second piece, or there's two elements that I think anybody who looked at this would be worried about, and I'm not going to bore listeners with things like interest rate assumptions that were optimistic in that, but really, what's the cost of replacing the wetlands? There may be 1,300 acres of new wetlands that have to be constructed, depending on how much of the new area is a swamp. That's not been effectively modeled. It was a very easy thing to do to have given the range of costs, which runs in the, you know, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars down to a few million. The most optimistic assumption was used. And then secondly, we're going under this proposal would make the biggest urban area in the Western Hemisphere underwater of all times. And the environmental risks associated with that, from polluting ground aquifers and removing old gas tanks and perhaps areas that have been polluted as a consequence of industrial waste, could be huge. And so those were very cursorily examined in the first study, and my colleagues who are biologists and groundwater experts can speak better on that. But we think that the cost of those could well exceed $1 billion. It's safe to say $1 billion, that even under their assumption of low of water demand, which is just an assumption that's, I think, been killed, that would make this not feasible. So we think the project as it's laid out is not feasible, and so couldn't really go to a phase three study, should not go to a phase three study.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the proposed Mounds Lake Reservoir. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Dennis, I think to summarize what Tim is saying, Tim and Mike have said here is, one, the project, the reservoir, the proposed reservoir, promises a solution to a problem that doesn't exist, and does so at both great financial and environmental costs. You know, we need to give you a chance to respond to those. I mean, fairness dictates that.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm gonna speak from the voice of business. I mean, my strong suit is, you know, as director of operations at the Chamber of Commerce, is to monitor this project, look at the impacts. I'm gonna try to speak from that. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna suggest that I'm an expert in economic development or that I hold a degree in economics. Mm-hmm. But I do have a couple things that I'd like to ask Mike. Mm-hmm. You know, in the terms of when you say that the economic impact is only seasonal, I mean, from my research and my ears listening to our delegates on both sides of the aisle down at the State House, is that we have a we have a retention problem. You know, how do we retain young people to this area? And the Regional Cities Initiative asked regions to act together. How can we formulate ideas that's going to help solve some of these problems? And one is that of retaining young people to the region. And I think the Mounds Lake Project is an answer to that, because when I think about how it impacts our particular area, first and foremost, whether it's a water need or not, is that if I could only imagine that the city of Marion or perhaps Noblesville or Fishers or the northeast side of Indianapolis or Greenfield or even Newcastle, for that matter, lands the next great Amazon announcement that there's 1,000 jobs coming, or any job announcement that's paying $50,000 to $80,000 a year, what's going to attract them to want to live in our region? And I think this project is a paradigm shift for our region. I think it goes beyond the seasonal impacts and the jobs that Mr. Hicks is speaking on. And as a Chamber of Commerce, we see just with one simple trip out to California, could we attract those farmers out there that need water? When he says that there's no one that we can sell it to, the question that I ask is, do we have an ample source of water? Citizens just brought online another 20 million gallons of water. Why did they open up that pit if we don't need water? Why are they buying up ample amounts of aquifers out there at this time to suffice that? I mean, if we don't need water, why is the state of Indiana make it a priority that we have a water supply out there to attract businesses who need water? I can imagine. I mean, I wasn't in the room when citizens said that the water's fine. But if they're the only suppliers of water, why would they say anything else? And so, you know, as a businessman, as a, you know, looking at this from the operational side, this impacts our region. It's transformational. I understand that there are environmental impacts to it. I do not deny that. But I do think this is a Central Indiana regional project that has impact, that has merit. And to date, we've done 10% science on this. And the peer review from Ball State extrapolated on that 10%. Now, I don't know who would do that or why they would do that or what expense or what they had to lose. But I think to get to 50% or 100%, we need to get to phase three and discover that together.
Clearly, we've got a lot to talk about. We're talking about the proposed Mounds Lake Reservoir here on No Limits today. My guests are Tim Maloney, Mike Hicks, and Dennis Ashley. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
Minutes past the hour, and you're listening to No Limits on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, made possible by your sustaining membership and by Terry Lee Honda, offering direct access to Terry Lee every day. TLC is the Terry Lee commitment. Terry Lee Honda in Avon on U.S. Highway 36. More at terryleehonda.com. And by Penrod Art Fair, featuring over 300 artists, 6 stages, a children's area, and more at the grounds of the IMA, Saturday, September 12th. Ticket and event information at penrod.org. And by Endangered Species Chocolate, committed to supporting wildlife conservation worldwide, including species and habitat preservation. Now offering smooth, creamy cocoa spreads, available at natural food stores. You can send your questions to No Limits via social media. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. We're on Twitter at WFYI. No Limits with John Krall continues.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the proposed Mounds Lake Reservoir. Continuing a conversation, actually, that we began a year ago. My guests are Tim Maloney, who is the Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, Mike Hicks, who is Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University, which did a research paper on the feasibility of the proposed reservoir, and Dennis Ashley, who is Director of Operations and Business Development for the Madison County Chamber. We've gotten a Facebook message question from a listener named James. If you'd like to reach out to us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. James says, I believe that what is driving this proposal is greed for profit from future lakefront property sales for a few individuals who are probably politically connected. If this project is going to use taxpayer money, it should be made into a state park with no development allowed along the lakefront. If the purpose is to provide water security by making a reservoir, will the developers agree not to develop lakefront property? Dennis, I'll throw that one to you first.
There was a lot in that question. Thank you, James, for asking that question. I get that all the time. And from my understanding of the project, upon completion, if it was to be dammed up today and fill up in over a couple of months, because that's how strong the watershed of White River is, 73% of the lakeshore of the Mounds Lake is already developed with houses. I mean, they already exist. And so for it to turn into a geist, that confuses me, because I know that over time that transformation can occur. But you're talking about homeowners who want to sell their property and then it be developed. And that kind of development doesn't happen overnight. And I think everyone would agree that that is the case. The land that is undeveloped is particularly on the Yorktown side of the project and down the south side of the west face of the lake into the upper and across from Chesterfield, which, you know, I think they have the most to gain there. I think they're looking at development. Again, landowners would have to decide to sell. But as I understand it, we're asking these communities to come to a table, to sit down, to help develop the ordinances around this lake so that Anderson isn't just at an advantage and Yorktown is not. What does that land look like? What's the quality use of that? And setting ordinances and zoning regulations around that lake that not to benefit just one community over another. So to answer James' question about it becoming the next Geist, I don't think there's a problem with it becoming the next Geist. Is that a bad word? But if it was, I think you're looking at 20 to 50 years before you see a full transformation of something like that. He talked about taxpayers' use of dollars. The grant at this point is use of taxpayers' dollars. I don't deny that. I think the state looked at this as a feasible project to a water solution, and it had merit to continue study. To this point, again, 10% science, data, and engineering. We need to discover more. We could get into phase three and only spend $3-5 million. And I propose this to Mr. Hicks: if we were to privately fund that, would you be willing to let your thesis be proven on the phase three if it only costs that much? If it was privately funded dollars, because they extrapolated on that peer review, and I think that sent fear into what this project and what citizens think this project's all about. There needs to be more data. Who decides on a life-changing decision, let alone a community, Central Indiana regional changing project, based off of only 10% data? I don't think that we invest that way. At least my wife doesn't. She's an actuary, way smarter than me. She would tell me not to do such. And then, the water security. I absolutely agree with James that there is a water security issue out there. I mean, we just look at California and all of the efforts they're doing trying to preserve water, the water shortages that they have. I ask the question, do we have ample water supply in the state of Indiana? Ample? I mean, in the 1950s when we built the two reservoirs, Morris and Geist, I mean, the population was growing. But, I mean, did they have these same arguments then? Oh, we're not growing. We don't need water. And look at us now. We're busting at the seams. The Marion County in Indianapolis has reached out in a SEDS program, reached out in Regional Cities Initiative, said, we are greater than Marion County in Indianapolis alone. We are the eight donut counties of Indianapolis. We're bigger than this. We want to rebrand ourselves as a growing metropolitan area. To me, that answers a question that if we're going to grow, and that's our goal as the central part of this state, how can water not be a part of that? Every great civilization has had water at their resources.
I'm going to give Tim a chance to respond. I will say the phone banks are starting to light up here, so I'm going to ask all of us to try to be tight here in our expression if we can. Tim.
Sure. Thanks, John. Well,
sure.
That question raises a concern that has not gotten a lot of attention lately, and that's really through this whole process, and it's related to what kind of land use and ultimate features this proposed reservoir will have. On one hand, as Dennis mentioned, there's interest in having a lot of the lakeshore be privately owned and just developed, really, it seems like, on an informal basis by the private sector. Now, another person who is a supporter of the reservoir, Mr. Sparks from the Anderson Corporation for Economic Development, told a newspaper reporter recently that he thought that Brookville Lake in Indiana would be a good model and a form for the lake to eventually take, which is a publicly owned lake where the shoreline is completely protected. And when you look at those kind of models, Brookville Lake, Monroe Lake, Patoka Lake, Mississinewa, all those Corps of Engineers built reservoirs took land for the actual lake footprint and then took up to 1 to 2 times more land surrounding the lakes to help protect the shoreline. So at Brookville, the entire property footprint is 16,000 acres for a 5,000-acre lake. And if that's what we're talking about at the proposed Mounds Reservoir, then you're not talking about a 2,100-acre footprint. You're talking about a 4,000 to 6,000-acre footprint. And none of the costs or impacts for that kind of footprint have been evaluated or discussed at all to this point in the project. And those kind of questions need to be answered before we ever ask the local government units to make a commitment with this ordinance and multiple county infrastructure authority to start planning for the lake. We're just way too many unanswered questions and things we don't know about. And it should be the responsibility of the lake supporters to answer those before other interests and local governments are asked to formally embrace that idea.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake Reservoir Project here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Doug has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Doug, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
I'm from Kokomo. Kokomo and Anderson are a lot alike. And I did work at Chrysler up there for quite a few years. And I can tell you that the white-collar workers that made the $80,000 a year did not live in Kokomo. They all drove every day from Fishers and Carmel and Westfield. And a lot of it has to do with property values. And I, you know, whether they score at Amazon or not, I can't imagine too many people would reside, you know, in a city like Kokomo.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Doug. Actually, I'm going to throw that one to Mike first because I'd like some analysis, and then I will give you a shot, Dennis, real quickly. But how much of this is driven by the fact that, in your view, sort of stepping outside of it, and no offense to either Tim or Dennis here, but you do each have a stake in the discussion one way or the other. There are positions you've staked out. How much of this is driven by the fact that we are talking about a section of the state that, you know, has been hammered by sort of changes in the economy and has struggled to find economic and jobs development opportunities and is looking, you know, to some degree for a magic bullet here.
Right. I think the confused response from the voice of business picks that up. I mean, I appreciate, Dennis, that you've read my work on Regional Cities Initiative and the white papers that we've written on it and the testimony that I've given to the legislature. But this Mounds Lake didn't end up in the Regional Cities Initiative plan of either Central Indiana or East Central Indiana. Doug's right. To be sure, there are challenges in Anderson and Muncie and Kokomo, although Kokomo is fixing them pretty quickly, and Mayor Gednight seeing population growth in Howard County and Kokomo. The fact is that we do need to work on quality of place. This is a very expensive, low-impact investment. We need to bring people back to Central Indiana, north, south, east, and west, but a project like this that's going to spend this amount of money, and by the way, the touchy-feely rhetoric about needing water doesn't get to the fact that that's what has to pay for this expense. We're otherwise talking about like 1/6 of what we spend on education every year in the state of Indiana. So it's not a rhetorical issue where there's water demand. There has to be somebody who's going to write a contract that says I'll buy water for the 30-to-50-year bond that this would require. So, you know, Doug's right that the challenges in East Central Indiana and Anderson and others are about getting people to live there. I have often said Anderson, like its neighbors in southern Madison County, would be one of the fastest growing communities in Indiana if they could have fixed the F school system that they have, bring it up to an A or B where you would not be bleeding population and seeing people bypass them into Yorktown that has an A school system. That's where you need to fundamentally work on your quality of place, is in fixing your community and fixing your schools and taking advantage of the enormous population growth that will happen with plenty of water without Mounds Lake in Central Indiana over the next 50 years.
Dennis.
Yeah, Mr. Hicks, you're wrong on our ratings on our schools, and I think that I would put up any of our schools up against the ones that were Ball State resides in Delaware County. When you talk about regional cities initiatives and how you spoke on that, Madison County has a unique perspective on that. We're a part of the 8 donut counties of Indianapolis, and we're also a part of the East Central Indiana Regional Partnership. And so being able to listen to both of those presentations on regional partnership, you know, the RDA that's coming out of Delaware and Henry County right now, because those are the only two counties that are wanting to join the RDA right now, you know, that presentation was mostly Muncie-centric. And it was $40 million asked upon for, you know, a downtown waterfront on White River development. And I didn't know, did you do a peer review on that? Or did you do a peer review on the Red Line out of Indianapolis? I don't. What was the total number on the Red Line out of Indy, out of their partnership? What was as presented?
They,
do you remember?
They were released 2 days ago, so no, we haven't published.
I
need to answer that.
And I think we're wandering a little off point here. I do want us to stay on the Mounds Lake project.
Well, he dug into that. Madison County is not reputable with our schools, and I just beg to differ. I would be glad to have a discussion offline about where our schools are at and where they're going. But the point that Doug made was
the other
that,
thing way we could deal with that too is that the next time we do, it seems like a show about education here at least once a month, maybe sometimes twice a month. We'd be happy to have you come back and we could talk about that at that point.
To reiterate Doug's point, you know, if the opportunity exists to change a culture and to change the communities that this lake would impact, is that the economic impact doesn't have to be a business that's next door to the lake. These communities that surround East Centralia region and this lake, a company can move there, and those individuals may choose to live near the lake because it offers culture and a lifestyle. As he pointed out, quality of life is every economic development entity's top priority. Of what can we do to change that? Every state's saying it. It's a problem that every state has to answer. And this is one way that this region can do it on a major scale. Paradigm shift.
Tim, I'm going to give you 30 seconds, and then I want to get to a caller.
Thanks. Well, sure. Very quickly, yes, economic development people talk about and emphasize quality of life all the time, but the flaw in the reservoir proposal is that it seeks to boost quality of life by destroying part of the central natural feature for East Central Indiana, and that's the White River, which is a very high-quality river. And there is an alternative way to get that kind of quality of life and economic impact with much less risk, much less cost, and no environmental damage, and that's our alternative proposal, the Mounds Greenway. And that's what, when you look at Rust Belt communities around the country that are seeking to deal with the same kind of problems that Anderson's dealing with, they're looking at featuring and focusing on and protecting their waterways and then capitalizing on the economic opportunities that surround those kind of natural features. That's not what the Mounds Lake proposal does.
Mary, welcome to the program.
Yes. Good morning. Afternoon, I think.
Yes.
I wanted to ask on this scientific investigation that's going to be funded for $25 to $40 million. I don't know who would answer this, but the scientists, I understand, would be provided by the corporation that's building the dam, according to the National Environmental Policy Act. And that's one of the great flaws. It's very difficult to work for the corporation that's building it and expect this so-called fair evaluation of the loss and destruction that would occur. So who's going to do this scientific work that we're talking about in the future?
We'll try to get an answer for you, Mary. Thank you very much for the call and the question.
Thank you.
Well, I'll give Tim first a crack and then Dennis. Tim, who is supposed to do the work, the research?
Well, that is Mary is right in that the typical approach to a formal environmental impact statement is that the project sponsor, which in presumably in this case would be the proposed Mounds Lake Commission, would hire a consultant to prepare that environmental impact statement and do all the scientific research and surveys and studies. And in so many cases, that is that consultant is also very likely to be involved in the construction of the project. And in this instance, with the proposed Mounds Reservoir, consultant that's done has worked on the phase one and phase two studies is also a company that builds reservoirs.
Okay, Dennis, I'm going to give you a chance.
My understanding is that the four communities that would come together would form this Mounds Lake Commission. There, they would hire this consultant to to do that work. Now, we've used DLZ, and to my knowledge, you're the only ones that are building reservoirs and dams in central Indiana and throughout the globe. Now, if I was building a garage, I would hire a contractor who's reputable. You know, not everybody builds a reservoir. So there's not a lot of engineers out there that can do it. Now, I welcome Ball State to analyze that and to research that. We want them to be right there along with it because they've posed a lot of great questions. And that's what Phase 3 will do. We will discover more science and data and engineering than we will in any other phase that we've done to date. And that's what Phase 3 is about. If we only get incrementally into it and the discoveries and the claims that the peer review has seemed to have professed and have great belief out there, if that comes true, then I would be one to say this isn't a good project for it because I am a businessman. But I'm not willing to stop at 10% discovery. Let's find out a little bit more. And how far do we need to go to do that? It's not a $44 million price tag. I think we can get a lot more science and data and engineering. I think Mr. Hicks would agree if we just took that next step.
We are talking about the proposed Mounds Lake Reservoir here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. My guests are Tim Maloney, who is the Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, Mike Hicks from Ball State University, and Dennis Ashley from the Madison County Chamber. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us.
It's 1:39, and you're listening to No Limits on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, made possible by your membership and by NetLogix, an information risk management company dedicated to helping solve business and technology problems for customers since 1998. More information is available at netlogix.com. And by Apparatus, announcing Whiteboard Wednesday, an opportunity to tackle business challenges with an Apparatus technologist. More at apparatus.net/Whiteboard Wednesday. And by Eismiller, Indiana Week in Review text and email alerts. Receive subjects to be discussed sent before each week's show. Registration for Eismiller, Indiana Week in Review text and email alerts is available at wfyi.org/IWIR. Send your questions to No Limits via email at nolimits@wfyi.org or call 866-476-3881.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the proposed Mounds Lake Reservoir project. My guests are Tim Maloney, who is the Senior Policy Director for the Hoosier Environmental Council, Mike Hicks, Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at Ball State University, which did a research paper on the feasibility of the reservoir, and Dennis Ashley, Director of Operations and Business Development for the Madison County Chamber. We've been having a lively conversation. We are going to invite Max to join it right now. Max, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I enjoy your show a lot. Quick points. You know, I appreciate Dennis's input. I think it's been a good debate. You know, my question is, as far as property value and turning into a geist, I mean, clearly just because people own property around where the lake's going to be, that property's going to be reassessed. Either way, you're going to have a displacement of people, and in that area, it's a depressed area. So where are those people going to go? I live in inner city Indianapolis. I'm very connected to the White River. I listened to the show a couple of days ago about cleaning up that river and making it a source for everyone. How is this project going to affect downstream and those initiatives? Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks very much for the call, Max. Dennis, I'll start with you on that one.
Thank you, Max. Reassess property value. I agree. You know, the current state, if I could draw you a picture, Max, and that you could see the White River and you could see how it's in this valley and this gorge and how it starts in Anderson, it's 60 feet deep. And as it rises up to Yorktown, it's 9 foot deep. And it's in this valley. There are homeowners down there. There are landowners down there. It's not as if this lake's being built in an urban environment where we're taking out homes immediately to create this lake, and we're actually digging down. That gorge naturally exists. So, yes, there are some homeowners that will be impacted. And one thing that the chamber wants to make sure that happens on this project, and as the commission moves forward, that those people are treated fairly and honestly if this project was to move forward. I make no – it's not a joking matter. It's not something I take lightly every day. I know that being on this side of the project, that there is someone who's going to be impacted. Their home is going to be impacted. Their business is going to be impacted. But I say – I've said this before, but – you know, none of us rode in here on our horse today. And then we got the I-69 project down there that's coming through homes from Bloomington to Indianapolis. And how does that highway come through? And how does developments go through? And how do we move people out? And I think the proposed project that the Hoosier Environmental Council is offering is that when their trail system goes through, they're going to impact landowners just as well. It's not as big as what the Mounds Reservoir is, but they're going to have to deal with landowners. And I don't know how far that project's been on, or how long that project's been on the table, or how far they've gotten with that alternative. But it's the same conversation. We're still got to deal with landowners giving up their rights for the betterment of the community. So I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say because some of it and part of the energy and the intensity I hear in this discussion comes from a couple of really sort of bedrock concerns here. On Tim's side, obviously, I hear a desire to preserve natural resources, and we're getting that from a lot of our callers and listeners. I'm going to take the liberty of kind of synthesizing your discussion here. Dennis, what I'm hearing a lot from you, and some of the heat, obviously, about schools and the other things, is that, I hope I'm not putting words, but you almost feel as if Anderson's in a kind of box, or Madison County, and that somewhere there's got to be an avenue for you guys to grow. That there's got to be a way.
No, we just made an announcement just this last week of NTN, 128 million, 400 jobs. I mean, that announcement isn't coming from the other donut counties, out of Columbus. Oh. I mean, Purdue is investing in Madison County. We've had great announcements over the last, 2 to 3 years of Anderson making the right turn. We see this as an opportunity for Central Indiana. We see this as an opportunity for our region. Now, speaking on regions, this is, the other East Central Indiana counties see this as an asset, is that this project, if there is a water need, let's take that off, if I put that out for a second, if there is a water need and we are a possible solution to that, why would you not investigate that? Why would you not consider to look down that road and go as far as needed to get the right answers? 10% is not a stopping point. 10% is just enough to know we need to go forward. The peer review extrapolated on that 10%. Why would they do that? Why would you do that?
Well, Mike, I probably ought to give you a chance to respond to some of these because he is questioning the scholarship there.
Right. Well, Dennis is losing his temper over the fact that a research university did research peer review. And I would, having been on the other side of 100-some peer reviews, I tell you the best way to fix that is not to spy some causative agent in the research, but do better research. And the real fundamentals are here. The CED spent, $600,000 of state money on a study, and they assumed water demand. And that they could have spent half of that and identified the water demand. Right now, it's a speculative ghost non-presence that's required to pay for this. The 150 jobs that I quoted, right, that came from your website. That's a study that you said this is a peer example. So if you don't like the 150 job characterization, go back to your website and take down the studies that you said are good characterizations of what this lake will be after it's constructed. And the bottom line is it's a consequential fantasy that this is a cost-effective mechanism, A, to deliver water that's not demanded, or B, to generate population growth in central Indiana. Southern Madison County is one of the fastest growing places in the state right now. Madison County is going to grow. Mounds Lake isn't going to drive that.
Tim, I'm going to give you a real quick chance, and then I do want to get – we've got all of the phone banks lit up, and I'm getting more emails than I can
sure.
handle.
And just quickly on the private property impacts, the impact of Mounds Reservoir is not a few properties. According to their own Phase 2 study, 628 parcels, including business parcels, homes, and agricultural properties would be displaced by the proposed lake, and that's just within the 2,100-acre footprint in terms of any shoreline protection we don't know about. And then by contrast with the Mounds Greenway, yes, there would be private property, we hope would become part of that, but we only support that happening through agreements with willing sellers. We don't support the use of condemnation, which would be a power granted to the Mounds Lake Commission.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Kenny. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Kenny says, it is bizarre to hear anyone in a position of authority claim that Indiana has a water shortage in this year of record rainfall. What this state suffers from is mismanagement of overflows and the resulting outrageous pollution of its rivers, streams, and lakes. The water bigwigs and the chamber chief all need an elementary course at Purdue or IU in sustainable and ecologically responsible water management. Water management in Indiana is a national embarrassment. Well, Tim, that's a softball right down the middle of the plate for you, I think.
Yes, there's no question that Indiana needs to take a thoughtful and prudent approach to water resource management and supply going forward. But the idea that we're facing some imminent water shortage that justifies such a costly and damaging project like Mounds Reservoir, again, as we've talked about before, the evidence is just not there for it. And it also seems that the reservoir supporters are operating on the presumption that there is no future water supply planning and management activities going on, and that just couldn't be farther from the truth. Our large water utilities are planning for the future. Citizens Water, as we've talked about before, has a long-term plan to bring over 100 million gallons a day of new supply online in the next 25 to 30 years. So the idea that Citizens Water needs, folks in Anderson to do their water supply planning is not the case.
Got an email.
Be interested on getting that strategy, Tim, on how they plan on doing that. I would love to read
it. It's posted on Citizens Water website.
Yeah, right. And actually,
take a look at that.
Dennis, we've got an email that I think speaks to one of your points here from a listener named Mike, who says, the only way to attract and retain young people to the region is to give them a desirable place to live. We don't have mountains or beaches in Indiana. This would differentiate the area from other parts of the state, and attracting families with higher incomes would help improve the public school system rankings. That's Mike's argument, which sounds like in some level is the argument that you're advancing as well, right, Dennis?
I'm saying it's one. I do agree with him.
It's a secondary argument.
It's a secondary argument. I mean, it relates to how the region can improve itself. I mean, with the opportunity for this reservoir to be a solution to water need and how it can impact our region. You know, this wasn't a project that was built out in the middle of rural Indiana and there was low impacts. I mean, we're talking about an urban environment. I don't think there's any other reservoir project like it in the United States where it has such a high impact and being so close to metropolitan Indianapolis. When Geist was built, it was farmland. And for us to look at this project and to say that this is going to be built in an urban environment and impact Muncie and impact Anderson and connect those two communities for a 100-year solution to economic development and changing cultural environments in those regions, it's worth looking at. It's worth taking a closer look.
Is there a plan B if it doesn't go?
You know, I'm not aware of what plan B, C's, and D's are.
Okay.
What I'm aware of right now
other than yours,
is,
yeah,
that,
I know,
is that the, right. These communities are being asked to sit together at the table so that when the science and the data and engineering come in, all four units are receiving that, whether it's from the DLZ that's currently out there or it's a new vendor that's selected. But when all that data comes in, how can one unit say to the others, we did this research, now do you believe me? And I'm with Tim. We do need more research. And I think that the units that are going to make a decision if this is going to move forward or not need to come together and receive that information at the same time.
And I'll ask real quickly, I mean, because that was a point that was raised and we sort of dropped it. His argument that to some degree the cart is preceding the horse here, that before the research is there, we've got these government units signing off on it. You know, is that a case? I mean, would
form a water utility infrastructure so that if a mounds reservoir is built, then those communities would have the rights to sell that water. Now, if the phase three report says we can't build the reservoir, well, then there's no reservoir. And so it will dissolve. There's a sunset on the ordinance, 2019. If we can't discover the science and the data and the engineering to prove that this is a feasible project to move forward or find the financing to build it, they can walk away. From my understanding, that's what's being presented right now to these communities.
Okay. I'm going to take a couple of calls. We are getting tight on time, so I'm going to ask both our callers and our panel to be very tight in their responses. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, yes, Jeff, you're on the air.
Yeah. Well, my question is, how can you assure that the examination of the science, the data that you say you want, is going to be anything but partial if you've got the Mounds Lake Commission doing it? That is the dam builder's wish, to put this commission together to do these studies. And the studies are, nobody would disagree with that. The problem is you've got the fox wanting to be in the hen house. You got the people who want to build the dam saying they'll do the studies, or they'll decide who will do the studies. And I've seen a lot of these studies under NEPA that were just National Environmental Policy Act that you'll have to comply with, that were just total one-sided whitewashes because the promoters are doing them. How do you keep that from happening?
Okay, Jeff, thank you very much for the call and the question. Dennis, I'm going to give you about 45 seconds so we can get some more people in.
Jeff, great question. I haven't met a town council man or woman that wants to vote this project in that's going to impact someone's life based off 10% data. I mean, every councilman and woman that would sit on that commission is going to take to their constituents the information that is brought to them by the contractor that's working on this dam. I don't know of another format where a project of this size impacts so many communities where it's one unit saying to the other. That's why we're asking them to the table. Our elected officials in those areas, those men and women, they need to evaluate it and consciously vote to move forward or not. That's why they're all there. That's why they all have a vote. I was confused when Delaware County was opposed to it because we haven't even made it an option for them to join in. We want them to be there. Madison County wants Delaware County to be there. And we want them to have a say in this as well. And so, you know, all those who this impacts needs to have a say. That's what the commission completes.
Helen, welcome to the program. Helen, are you with us?
I am with you. I'm sorry.
Right. Not a problem. What's on your mind?
I was dying. I just want to make some clarification on some of the things that Dennis has said regarding Anderson and Anderson Community Schools.
I'll ask you to be brief because we are getting tight. Thanks.
I sell real estate for a living, and I can tell you now that most of the people I show houses to don't want to live in the city of Anderson because of Anderson Community Schools. Now, I think a lot of that is perception. I think the schools are getting better. But the idea that we're going to build a reservoir and people will come and build their homes here and correct our schools, I think is a little far-fetched of a thought. I would rather see that 28 or how many ever million dollars that they're talking about spending on this study. I would like to see that put into a study on how to improve our schools. And I think we would not have a problem, getting people to move here because it is a wonderful place to live. That's all I've got to say. Thanks
very much for the call, Helen. Dennis, I'll give you about 30 seconds there.
I'm not sure I propose that it's going to fix our school system. I think Mr. Hicks was saying that our school system was an F, when in fact I think it's a C. Terry Thompson, the superintendent, just has reached out to me, and it's a C rating. So, it's a paradigm shift in terms of culture. And I think that when you look at that opportunity and how it impacts communities, I think it's an argument to say, will it impact our schools? I think it would.
Tim, I'm going to give you – we've got just a little bit of time.
Sure. Well, just quickly, the phase three – study process is not just about study. The phase two report makes clear that phase three also involves preliminary design work, permitting work, and the environmental impact evaluation. You don't do any of those activities in planning for a project unless you intend to build it. So the idea that the local government units are just being asked to study this more and not become engaged in planning to complete the project, at least that's not what the formal reports of the proponents have said.
Dennis, you got about 10 seconds, and that's it.
I think all those things are accurate, but not all of them happen at the same time, and each one needs to take time to process through and evaluate.
Clearly, this is not the last word on this subject. I would like to invite everyone to come back at some point to talk about this. I think we easily could do about 5 hours on this subject. I'd like to invite all of our listeners to come back. We are going to continue this conversation because it's clearly something people on both sides care about a great deal. I'd like to thank my guests, Dennis Ashley, Mike Hicks, and Tim Maloney. And I'd like to thank our listeners for some great questions. I'm sorry we couldn't get to them all. Next time, I promise we will. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.